I mean, to me, I'm the type of kid, no matter if I walk across the stage, no matter if it's on camera, no matter what the draft is, I'm going to be excited. It's going to still be a dream come true. I treat it as if I'm walking across the stage because my name's still being called and I'm going to play for a team and my last name is on the back of a jersey.
That was potential number one overall pick Anthony Edwards on why a dream that comes true virtually can be just as meaningful as the real thing. Yes, the 2020 NBA draft is finally happening tonight after no March Madness and 5 extra months of anticipation. And today, ESPN draft analyst Mike Schmitz catches you up on everything you need to know as the teams picking in the top three, the Timberwolves, Warriors, and Hornets, are on the clock. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, November 18th. This is ESPN Daily. Mike Schmitz, thank you for joining me, man. The day that you work towards every single year has finally arrived.
Yeah, I feel like this is our Super Bowl, and we've been waiting for this forever. First, we thought it was going to be in June, and then maybe October, and now here in November. So, I think teams and myself are very excited to get this one in the books.
Mike Schmitz is an NBA draft analyst for ESPN, and he's been traveling the world scouting NBA prospects for nearly a decade. I love the NBA draft personally. I went to the draft at the Garden growing up in New York as a sad Knicks fan, and I still love the draft, which tells you something about my own personal pathologies. But the weirdness of this draft, Mike, you said it. This is going to be held in a way that has never been seen before. It's going to be entirely remote. Adam Silver, the commissioner, Mark Tatum, the deputy commissioner, they're going to be reading out picks live from ESPN studios in Bristol, where you are right now. So tell me what it's been like for teams and for players to go through this whole draft process in the midst of a global pandemic.
It's been very, very challenging for teams and players alike. You know, from the team side, they're used to having March Madness, the NBA Draft Combine, tournaments like Portsmouth Invitational, which is where you see, you know, a Jimmy Butler and some of these seniors pop up. They're able to have, you know, their individual workouts, one-on-one workouts, team workouts, really have these guys in their building. And this pre-draft process, that just simply hasn't been the case. And so I think you have teams kind of relying on a lot of these Zoom calls, right? We've all been kind of in Zoom jail more or less for the last few months. They're relying on film. They're relying on intel. And then from the player's perspective, I think they just want to finally hear their name called. I mean, this is the moment that they've been waiting for their entire lives. And so I feel for a lot of these kids just having to have this pushback. They've each had very different circumstances. I mean, some guys are like in the gym working out with NBA players every day. Some are with, you know, their brother and their cousin in some empty gym, just 1-on-0 getting workouts in. So it's been very strange.
I guess the thing I think of when I think about what might be lost in this iteration of the draft, like, are there going to be suits, Mike? Are we going to get like the NBA draft fashion that we've been blessed by in the past?
Oh, we're getting it. It's coming. It's coming virtually. You're not going to see that same strut, the same level of excitement that we generally get in Barclays with them walking up on the stage. But from everything I've seen out on social media, everything I've heard, I think the suit game is still going to be strong.
Yeah, I just want, if one of those guys wants to go retro and bring back like the 17-button suit, I just want to make sure the camera frame contains all 17 of those buttons.
We're going to do everything we can to get that done. You know, I hope we really, really highlight the fashion because that might steal the night, to be honest.
So I want to take a deep dive into the top three players in the draft to start here because the three of them, Mike, who you've been talking about relentlessly for months now, LaMelo Ball, James Wiseman, Anthony Edwards, they're all still in play for the number one overall pick, which belongs, of course, to the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I want to start with LaMelo because we know him as the brother to Lonzo, the son of LaVar, and he chose to play overseas in Australia instead of going to the college game. But for the uninitiated here, what does LaMelo offer to whichever team does end up selecting him tonight?
I think he's the best prospect in the draft, honestly. I think if he played at Duke, Kentucky, enter any big name college program. And he didn't have some of the questions about kind of the circus that has surrounded him at times in his life. I think he would be the runaway number one pick. In terms of his game, I mean, he's a big point guard, 6'7", close to 6'8". He's one of the youngest players in the draft. He was a late bloomer. So I think people remember him as the young, you know, 12-year-old looking kid bombing half court shots. But he's really grown into his frame. Has great size, has the ball on a string as a ball handler. He's incredibly shifty and smooth, and his playmaking is ridiculous. The way he sees the game is really, really special. I've described him as kind of like a supersized Trae Young in some ways. You know, he's not quite that level of shooter, but the same level of showtime. He's that type of player who's going to bring excitement to any franchise. Still has some questions to answer about the defense, the decision-making, the shooting, all those things. But like I said, I think if he were here stateside and people saw him on a more regular basis, he'd be the runaway number one pick.
You're able to spend some time with LaMelo out in Australia because you travel the world as part of your job as NBA draft guru for us. What did LaMelo have to say about how he developed his own game?
Yeah, it's been a very, very wild journey. You know, he's not a man of many words. He's very brief in interviews. And even, it's funny, even when you ask him about certain plays that he's seeing on the floor, he doesn't really even know how to describe what he's seeing.
What's going through your head here? Like, why do you have such confidence in kind of passing these guys open? Like, what are you seeing at this point?
Pretty much just the feel of the game. You know, I've been doing it for a long time. Developed it when I was young and just pretty much just know how to like make little passes like that, just little things. And you can
see here, like, he's like, man, I'm just playing basketball. This is what I've been doing my entire life. But I think that it was kind of a nice break for him to be away from all the cameras. You know, I was out in Lithuania when they decided to, you know, leave high school and jump overseas and start playing in Lithuania. And so I went out and saw him there. And going to a practice and a game, it was madness. It was chaos. There were, you know, reality show cameras everywhere. He looked miserable. And to go from that to then seeing him in Australia, where he was very free, he was able to focus strictly on basketball, he seemed much more at peace. And so I'm hoping for him that, you know, he lands in an organization where he can finally be in one spot. I mean, this kid has been at Chino Hills High School, and then he goes to Lithuania playing for this club that, you know, nobody had ever heard of. It's not like a premier team in Europe. And then he's playing in the JBA, which is basically was LaVar's league. And then he goes to Spire Academy. He was putting up, like, I think his stats I see here, 40 points, 14 rebounds, 11 assists per game. So that was kind of like the Globetrotters. And then he goes from there out to Australia. So I've never seen a pre-draft kind of development path like this. So for him to finally find a home and it potentially, you know, going to be one of those three franchises, I think will be kind of a sigh of relief for him, honestly.
I want to talk to you about a circus of a different kind that has been following around the big man at the top of the draft, James Wiseman, because the way that most of America got to know Wiseman was at Memphis. And we covered that story quite a bit on ESPN Daily. But for those who don't remember, back in November 2019, he got ruled ineligible by the NCAA for accepting over $11,000 from Memphis coach Penny Hardaway. He gets suspended by the NCAA. He chooses to leave Memphis in January. He hires an agent to get ready for this draft. And he's also, by the way, this tremendously talented player with a ton of upside. So how would you describe James Wiseman's skill set as we stand here today?
Yeah, he's maybe the most physically impressive center prospect I've ever evaluated. I mean, he's close to 7'1", 7'5" wingspan, 9'6" standing reach. So that's close to, you know, Rudy Gobert territory in terms of the reach. He's very, very graceful as kind of a guy who runs the floor, can catch lobs.
James Wiseman, nobody boxed him out, and Wiseman with the emphatic finish.
can protect the rim.
Lexington, oh, Wiseman erasing another one. That was so elite.
He's very fluid with the ball. Like, we're seeing more bigs in this game, you know, handling and playing out of, you know, these handoffs and different kind of more modern actions. And I think teams who really like him envision him being able to do some of those things. I've described him as like a DeAndre Jordan with a little bit more skill. A big guy who really runs the floor, catches lobs, blocks shots, and then also is a little bit more modern and can potentially step out, shoot the three, and handle a little bit. The difficult part with him is just there's not a huge resume, obviously just the three games for scouts to evaluate him off of. And then also it's going to have been a year since he played a competitive game by the time he steps foot on an NBA court.
Right.
And that's the same for LaMelo Ball. And that's what makes this so tricky when evaluating these top guys. So I do think it's going to take him a little bit of time to adjust.
You sat down with Wiseman for this interview over Zoom. What did you learn getting to actually talk to him virtually face-to-face?
Yeah, he has a great way about him. He has a great personality. He's a smiley kid in that setting.
Who do you think are some of the best rim protectors that you've studied?
Most definitely Hakeem, David Robinson, Shaq, different players like that, the Dikembe Mutombo. So. Mm-hmm.
You got the finger wag or no? You need a...
Yeah,
you got that? Okay, there we go. Well, yes.
You know, we've been interviewing him since he was 15 years old. So for as much as he's a mystery to some, your general fan or, you know, even some NBA teams who are maybe a little late to the game, I mean, he's been in the USA basketball program since 2016. So we've been able to get to know him very, very well throughout the years, despite the limited resume. And where I've really seen him grow, you know, over these last, I'd say, 18 months or so, from a guy who was very, very shy, a little bit introverted. He's still that way. Didn't always play hard, was kind of a selective competitor, you know, to somebody who is really, really starting to play with a stronger motor. And I think we're going to see that in the NBA.
So the other potential number one pick, this is the guy that is looking like the most likely number one selection in your view, is my understanding. And that's Anthony Edwards out of the University of Georgia. So what should we all know about Edwards' game and also his personality?
He's an incredible talent. His ability to score the ball at will is one of one in this draft.
Here's Edwards in transition. Gets off a three. Buries it. He can't miss.
I was at the Maui Invitational. You know, I saw him go for 37 points against Michigan State, one of the best teams in the country, 33 points in the second half, and he looked like an NBA All-Star.
I'm going to have to put on another pair of Maui gyms just to protect myself from Anthony Edwards' rays. That was a heat check.
Kawhi Leonard, Giannis, whatever defender you want to put out there, like, they couldn't have stopped.
Wow.
When he's really, really engaged and locked in, he's really good. He's got great size. He's 6'5", strong, 225, 230 pound frame, 6'10 wingspan. His measurements are actually very much on par with like a James Harden. You know, not a future Hall of Famer. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but how he scores the ball in somewhat similar ways, you know, rivals Harden in some sense. This is a kid who's been through a lot in his life. He lost his grandmother and his mother, who were basically the ones who raised him. He lost them within a year span. You know, his brother and sister had joint custody of him, you know, more or less throughout his high school years. So he loses them in eighth grade, and he's just kind of trying to find himself. You know, he was a football player growing up. He had these physical tools that were just incredible. And then he started kind of shifting full-time to basketball, and his talent just really, really started to pop. And when you sit down and get to know him, he's an incredibly charismatic kid. You know, there are days when he's a little bit down and he's not going to light up a room. But when he's feeling good, I mean, his smile, his charisma, his joy, he's extremely personable. We did a film session, you know, early in the year, and it was my favorite one of the year just because I got the best version of him.
Explain your personality. Like, how would you describe yourself?
On the court, I feel like
no matter if I'm playing good or not, like, I'm energetic all the time for my teammates. Like, as you can see, when in the first half when my teammates doing, I'm jumping around. Yeah. Second half when I'm scoring and they scoring, I'm jumping around. Like, no matter what's going on, I'm jumping around all the time.
You could see how he would be a fan favorite potentially down the road.
All of which is to say that there is uncertainty at the top of the draft, but you have a sense, it sounds like, Mike, in terms of what order this could shake out. Timberwolves 1, Warriors 2, Hornets 3. What do you think we're getting in order?
I mean, it's still wide open, to be honest, but we've gone with Anthony Edwards. You know, I think he makes the most sense fit-wise with the Timberwolves, just because you have D'Angelo Russell already, who's kind of a ball-dominant, cerebral guard, and you already have Karl Anthony Towns, the face of your franchise. You would think that LaMelo Ball and James Wiseman don't make a ton of sense there. I would say Wiseman, number 2, to Golden State. Now, this pick could very much be in play as well. You know, you hear a lot of trade talk.
Right.
The Warriors are on a different timeline than most teams drafting number 2. And my thought there is, NBA bigs have become kind of like NFL running backs. You know, you can go get one for pretty cheap on the free agent market. But Wiseman is the name that you hear most with them. And then LaMelo Ball, if he's kind of the leftover of the 3 there to the Charlotte Hornets, I think that would actually be a really, really interesting fit. They have a young, well-respected head coach. And I think having Michael Jordan as your owner, you know, with any of those questions about the quote-unquote circus or whatever you want to call it.
Mike, how is LeVar and Michael Jordan? How are they going to get along, do you think? That's what we're really getting at here.
The real thing we need to figure out is how we could live stream a one-on-one game between those two. I think that could break the internet.
The long-awaited one-on-one game between LeVar and MJ. Yes. Oh, my God.
So that's how I see it shaking out, but I still think it's going to be complete chaos.
All right, coming up, I need you to tell me about some players we'll see outside of the top 3 that could make an impact, including this mystery man who's climbing up teams' draft boards.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Mike, the 2020 NCAA tournament is how we usually get to know all of these players. It's how the public meets them, oftentimes for the first time. And that was one of the first sporting events that got canceled as a result of this pandemic. And so, one player that certainly would have benefited from that spotlight is Dayton's Obi Toppin, who has this remarkable background because he is the son of a New York streetball legend who is nicknamed Dunker's Delight, which is quite honestly enough for me to know. But what else should we know about Obi Toppin?
Maybe the most unprecedented physical jump that I've ever seen from a late bloomer. Now, I wasn't there watching him at Ossining High School as a 6'5" senior when he first dunked. You know, I wasn't there watching him at Mount Zion Prep when he did a prep year. But when you talk to people who saw him back then, they say he was soft and unproductive, honestly. As a 6'5" senior, he was kind of this lanky kid who didn't really have any Division I buzz whatsoever. And so he was set to go to a junior college. He was going to go to Monroe College. And it's funny, his mom kind of outlined this story for me. They were at Rucker Park. It was a June day. I forget, maybe 2016. And he was supposed to sign at Monroe College the next day because prep school can be, you know, really expensive. So he's set to go to Monroe College. He doesn't have great grades. And his godfather comes through to watch him, catches wind of this, and is like, no. Like, he can't go to junior college. We're going to send him to prep school. Give me like 24 hours. So he asked for 24 hours. And a week later, he ends up at Mount Zion Prep School in Baltimore. And throughout that year, he sprouts to 6'8". He's dunking. He's explosive. He's starting to look more like his dad as a player, who was one of the best dunkers I think that New York streetball scene has seen in maybe the last, you know, 10, 20 years. Ends up at Dayton. He's an academic redshirt. He grows another inch. And then he starts playing his redshirt freshman year. And I think they were like, oh my God. Okay. We knew we maybe got a steal, but we didn't expect this.
Chapman gives it up to Toppin.
Get him ready. Get him ready for the dunk contest in the NBA.
Ever since he stepped foot in a game that year, it's been this snowball effect, this upward momentum that just hasn't stopped.
Do you have a sense as to where he might end up going or how high he might end up going?
Yeah, I see his range as probably like 4 to 8. Maybe Chicago at 4. I think Cleveland at 5. He would make some sense, you know, just play down the road in at Dayton, and maybe even 6 to Atlanta. You know, he'd be a great lob threat for Trae Young. I think he'd be a lot of fun there. He would love to end up back in New York, you know, just given what we just outlined. And I'm sure his family would love that as well, just being able to play in Madison Square Garden and all that. So those are kind of the three teams that I look at most for him: Cleveland, Atlanta, and then New York.
So from Rucker and New York to the rest of the planet now, I mean, the international scene, Mike, is one of your specialties. You spend how many months a year traveling globally usually?
I would say I spend 2 to 3 months in Europe or Africa. I also go to Africa and help coach the Uganda national team. I'm actually flying to Egypt right after the draft, 2 days after, to help coach a tournament out there. So, yeah, spending a lot of time away from the United States to check these guys out.
So based on all your global travels and reporting, are there any international players in this draft that we should be looking out for in particular?
Denny Avdija is the biggest name that, you know, I love, just having watched him, you know, since he was 16 years old. His father played for the ex-Yugoslavia national team, so he brings kind of that Serbian toughness on that side. And then his mother is from Israel, and he was born and raised in Israel. So he has this very unique combination, you know, of toughness from both of those regions. He's a perfect fit to me in today's game. You know, I've described kind of that 6'9", 6'10", forward as a queen on the chessboard. You know, that's maybe the most coveted position in today's game. Now, he's not, don't expect Luka Doncic. You know, that's a generational talent. He's not on that level. I could see Denny going as high as number 4 to the Chicago Bulls. You know, they've had a lot of success in the past with international prospects. If you look at Toni Kukoc, I would say that's kind of the top of his range, but you hear his name come up a lot with the Chicago Bulls.
So let's go out of the top 5, a little bit deeper into the draft. Who are some players that you're monitoring most recently whose stocks are rising heading into this thing?
Yeah, the name I have, and going international again here, but the name I have a close eye on here is a kid by the name of Alexei Pokushevsky. He's kind of the mystery man of sorts of this draft. He's the youngest player in the draft, 18 years old. I've described him kind of as like a Serbian Bol Bol. Just like if you throw on his highlights, he does some ridiculous stuff. I mean, he's almost 7'1". He shoots it off the dribble, off the catch. He handles in transition, he can pass, he blocks shots. And so I'm just interested to see where he ends up going, because he's kind of like this ball of clay. I remember, you know, a few years ago when it was Thon Maker and Papa Giannis who kind of crashed the lottery and shocked some people by going a lot higher than they thought. And I wonder if this kid could be the next one to do that.
So the last ingredient of utter chaos to introduce into your night tonight, Mike, is this notion that, oh, by the way, like all these people are getting traded. Chris Paul gets traded. Drew Holiday gets traded to Milwaukee. James Harden is looming somewhere, unhappy with Houston. And Russell Westbrook is also looking out of the Rockets. So what is your sense of how a trade, maybe a blockbuster, could impact what we find out happens in this draft?
It really could. I mean, as high as the top. The Timberwolves, Golden State, even Chicago, you know, all those teams are not your typical rebuilding team, especially, you know, Golden State. From everything I've heard, teams in the top 10 have been on call after call after call after call because we're basically merging the draft and free agency. We're squeezing it into this like 3-day window. So I could see a ton of movement, you know, at the top of this draft. And, you know, some teams would love to get their hands on a top 5 pick and then flip it for a player. Like, I could see a lot of 3-way deals just because of some of the teams that have a lot of picks at the top of this draft. So, again, chaos is probably the overused word, but I think it's the right word when we're talking about this draft.
Mike Schmitz, thank you so much for making sense of that chaos. And also, safe flight to Egypt. I will be rooting for Uganda from now on.
Yes, we need it, man. 3-0, it's coming. Thanks, Pablo. I appreciate it.
Okay, up next. How basketball isn't the only sport where a prospect's wingspan is a startlingly valuable commodity.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. Putting a big deposit on a fancy car is one thing. Putting a big deposit on something that would put a big deposit on a fancy car, that's quite another. But an anonymous buyer in China dropped $1.9 million on a racing pigeon this week, winning the talented bird at a Belgian auction. And despite this being the most bread someone has ever thrown at a pigeon, the deal was considered a real coup. The bird-brained buyer had actually set the previous record last year on a pigeon named Armando at $1.4 million, and that number seemed really tough to beat. But this time, egged on by another Chinese pigeon fancier, it became clear that neither bidder was a fair feather fan of this year's quarry, named New Kim. New Kim's new owner sent the price soaring, at one point going up $325,000 in a half hour, just enough to rule the roost. All of this dovetails with a boom in pigeon racing in China, which originated in the Ming Dynasty almost 700 years ago. Gamblers in particular have recently flocked to the sport, and in Beijing alone, some 100,000 pigeon breeders have taken wing. In fact, the owner of Armando and New Kim wants these two expensive birds of a feather to really stick together. Which means that the reason a person might buy a fancy pigeon is the same reason some other people might buy a fancy car: to get chicks. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll squawk to you tomorrow.